right, open your Bibles again. Who brought your Bibles? Open it to Matthew chapter 14. How was your day? Good. Cool. It was a fun day, and it's been fun camp. I can't believe it's already Tuesday night. How many of you think the week's going by fast? Anybody? How many of you think it's going by slow? Okay. How many of you never thought about it? Okay. Hey, Matthew chapter 14 is a story about what we just read about, and maybe you've heard it a different way in the Bible, and I just kind of want to read tonight's passage, which was basically what this video is based off of, as we continue the story of Peter. By the way, before I go any further, wasn't last night awesome to see what God did? Just calling some of you to follow Jesus for the first time. I thought that was cool. There we go. Come on. It was awesome, wasn't it? Man. Tough crowd. No, it was so neat. And now I think what we get to do is for the rest of the week, really just kind of build off that, right? And so now it's like we've presented who Jesus is and let's follow him. And now kind of really starting with tonight's message and the next few nights, a lot of this is really directed at those of you who would claim to be followers of Christ about what it really means to follow him. And we're going to kind of learn through the life of Peter. And so my hope is, like, tonight, I know some of you guys are taking notes, which is awesome. You got your Bibles open, that you pay attention, because, man, when you leave this place here in just, man, a number of days and head back into kind of your normal family environments, there's going to be a heck of a lot of distractions that you're going to be facing. And that's what I want to talk about tonight. I believe that one of the biggest challenges that young people face today, if not the biggest challenge, in trying to live a life following Jesus Christ is battling distractions, everything that's vying for your time. That's what I want to talk about tonight. And I think it's going to be a fun time. Matthew chapter 14, let's just start by kind of giving you an overview of this story about where this video came out of. Let's go down to verse 22, okay, Matthew 14. Here's how it was. Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. After he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But the boat was already a considerable distance from the land, buffeted by the waves, because the wind was against it. Okay, so the disciples are out on a boat, the Sea of Galilee. Jesus is up on a mountain. There's a storm going on. And during the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. Remember, we talked about last night, Jesus had power over those things, so it was like no big deal. It's like, I don't know, he could have flown or whatever. He chose to just kind of walk on water, which wouldn't that be fun, man, to just go out on that lake and just charge it and run? I don't challenge, please don't do that, because there is no swimming in the lake, and you probably will not walk on top of it. So in the winter, you can, right? Isn't that correct, Annie? In the winter, you can walk on top of the water, which is kind of cool, but this isn't the winter. So the boat came as already considerable distance. Verse 25, during the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went out to them walking on the lake. And when the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. Disciples are always scared, right? It's a ghost, they said and cried out in fear. The disciples, like, they believed in ghosts. Come on, guys. But immediately, Jesus said to them, take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid. And then Peter speaks out and says, Lord, if it's you, tell me to come out to you on the water. Come, Jesus said. Then Peter got down out of the boat and walked on the water and came toward Jesus. Imagine that for a moment. It was a cliff in the video. In the Bible, it's he steps off the boat, and just imagine it for a moment. He's got his eyes fixed on Jesus. The disciples are behind him. And in a way, maybe they were jealous that they didn't have that type of courage or faith. But in some ways, they were probably glad that they weren't as stupid as Peter, right? Because they're like, Peter, what are you doing? You're not Jesus. You can't do this. And so Peter's on the edge of the boat. And in that moment, man, I would love to have a moment where I had that type of faith, right? I mean, you saw it in the video, the type of faith where Jesus invites him to come. And that moment of that, it's the first step, isn't it? I mean, isn't that what it is? How many of you guys have ever, like, jumped off a cliff or a high dive or something into water before, off a high thing? It's just that jump. And you're like, one, two, three, and you don't jump, right? I had my friend Aaron. We were at the lake out in California, and we were doing boat stuff, and we came up, and there's a cliff. It's probably 25 feet high or something, and we'd walk around and jump off the cliff into deep water, so it's really safe. And so we would, I don't recommend trying this at home, but we did, and it was like a rush. And I remember Aaron got up there, and we'd all go up there and just run and go, ah, we were having such a good time, and Aaron wanted to have a good time. He's this big guy. He was this wrestler. I mean, just a big guy and just strong. And, like, he didn't think he was scared of anything. And he got up to the top. He's like, ah. 45 minutes later, we're all on the boat. It's anchored in the cove down there. We've already eaten our lunch. The stereo's blaring on this wakeboard boat. And we're there. And there's Aaron. We'd counted to 300 times. One, two, three. At the end of the day, Aaron walked back down and couldn't do it. Like, I think of that moment, I think of Peter, right? At that, it's just that moment where you have to get up that kind of courage. Peter does get up that kind of courage. And you got to imagine that he had faith to do it, but still at the same time, when his first foot didn't sink, he was probably like, oh, like it really works, right? And he walks out. Now, we already know that there's a little wind and a little waves going on, but it says, you know, that he's got, it implies that he's got his eyes focused on Jesus. And so he begins literally just walking out like this towards Jesus. But it doesn't end there, does it? Because then what happens after that? Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came toward Jesus. Verse 30, Matthew 14. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and began to sink, and he cried, Lord, save me. In a moment, and you saw it in the video, instead of looking at Jesus, he immediately thought, what in the world am I doing out here in a storm? And instead of fixing his eyes on Jesus, what'd he do? He starts to go, wait, there's wind and there's waves. And he looked over on this side, and he looked over on this side, and he began to sink, and he said, Lord, save me. And immediately Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. He said, you have little faith. Why did you doubt? And when he climbed into the boat, the wind died. And those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, truly you are the Son of God. I imagine in that moment, if I'm Peter, and Jesus goes, you have little faith, you're like, but Jesus, I took the step. Like, I was the one with the most faith. Talk about my other chicken friends that are back in the boat. Like, where's some credit here, Jesus? Like, I'm the one who took this step. But you know, one of the greatest faith moments isn't when you take that first step. It's that continual, daily step of putting Jesus first. Last night, some of you took that initial step, and you did what Peter did, and you just went like this, and you started moving towards Jesus. Yes, that takes great faith. But you know, I think sometimes we think of something like last night, and maybe others of you have had big experiences like that, and we think of it as a one-time experience. But I think what this teaches me is that following Jesus and walking and striving, walking after him and striving to be like him is not a one-time experience, is it? It's a daily experience of walking towards Jesus. But you know, just like I opened up talking about, the problem was, in that video, the problem was with this passage was one thing. He took his eyes off Jesus and looked at the world around him. And I believe that you guys are going to be facing the same things when you leave this camp on Saturday. You're going to go back to life, and there's going to be a heck of a lot of distraction. You don't even have your digital devices up here, do you? I mean, or you're not supposed to anyway. You're supposed to like hand them in or something. Like, we try to minimize those distractions as much as possible. And like, I don't mean to like paint like a bad picture, but like being a kid in 2015 is like as hard as it ever has been. That's what old people say, right? When I was your age. But like it is, right? I mean, it's hard. There are so many distractions and different things. And here's what I strongly believe. The problem is when we look at these things, it's kind of like that movie Up, right? Squirrel. Right? It's like what happens is when we start looking at something and we fix our eyes on something, we forget what's truly important and we run after it, don't we? Because I believe this, that where we focus our eyes, where we put our attention is going to determine the direction of our life. And so if we look this way, we're going to walk this way. For Peter, he looked this way and he started sinking. And so we have to begin to evaluate our lives and go, wait, what are the things that are most important to us? You know, I borrowed Ryan's camera right here, and I don't really know how to use cameras like this too much, but one thing I know is this is a little bit better than my phone's camera, right? I mean, it better be, right? I mean, look at this thing, right? It's like super gnarly. And, you know, the cool thing about cameras like this, what I love doing, is focusing on certain things and, like, blurring out the world kind of around it, right? I mean, it's kind of the cool, edgy thing to do when you can do that. So you, like, come to the front row. You want your picture taken? And you go like this. And I can, what's your name? Wait, we've done this before, haven't we, Katrina? We were over there. You were going towards God. You know what? I already did one of you. Okay, what's your name? What is it? Okay, so if I want to take a picture of Kirsten, what I can do is I can get it really close to her face. Okay, is that close? And then I can go boom, and I didn't do a very good job there, but what I can do, if I was really good, is I can begin to focus on her face. Now, the thing is, behind her is I have, like, what's your name?
Tyler
back here, and what's your name?
Jared.
I got Tyler and Jared behind her. But if I'm a really good photographer, I could make her, what do they call it in photography, the focal point, right? The focal point is the image that you actually focus on, and you blur out the world around it so that I wouldn't know that Tyler and Jared, is that your names? That Tyler and Jared were even behind her, right? If I did a good enough job as a photographer, you know, that's what focal points. I want everybody to do a little illustration right here. I want for you to take your hand and put your finger out in front of you like this. This is brilliant. You're going to learn something about yourself that's just amazing, okay? I want for you to focus, and I want for you to make right now your finger the focal point. So I want you to stare at it. If you got any hairs coming out of your finger, dirt in your fingernails, I want for you silently to stare at your finger. Make it your focal point. It's weird, isn't it? And now, on the count of three, I want for you, without moving your finger, without moving your head, your body, moving anything, I want for you to change your focal point and focus on whatever is behind your finger. All you're going to do is change your focus, but keep everything the same. One, two, three. Now back on your finger. Now back behind you. Aren't you geniuses? Isn't that cool that we can do that? Sometimes you ever just trip out about the things that you can, like, do. You're like, dude, I didn't even move anything, and I'm like a genius. No, like, seriously, we could just talk about, like, how crazy our bodies are forever, but what that demonstrates is a thing called focus. It's a thing called focal point. That we can determine exactly what we want to focus on. And in fact, that actually determines the direction of our life, right? If I focus on my finger, then I'm like, that is everything about me is that. Some people, you can multitask. I understand that, right? And so you could be playing Xbox, and your mom comes in and tells you to take out the trash. And you go, totally, Mom. And when you're done, you go, take it out. But if you're anything like my 13-year-old son, I go, hey, Connor, you got to do this, this, and this when you're done with Xbox. Totally, Dad. Later, did you do that? Right? Anybody like that before, right? Because what happens, right at that moment, he is, like, focused on, like, destroying a planet or something, right? I don't know, and, like, shooting the bad guys. And so when I come in, he's just in this world. And in our lives, we tend to focus on these different individual things and head in different directions. And when we do that with our spiritual lives, then we can begin to make choices that we don't want to be making. And you go, well, no, Adam, I'm going to leave camp, but I'm making a commitment to follow Christ, and I want to obey him, and I want to do this, this, and this, and this. And then as soon as you leave camp, like, something else comes into picture, so you're focusing on Jesus, and something else comes by, you go, ooh. And then we start to head in that direction. And I believe that if as followers of Christ, we could truly understand the power that distractions can have over our life and the importance of focusing on Christ, that our lives would be entirely different. I want to tell you a story out of the Old Testament for a moment. I don't want you to turn there. You can just stay in Matthew chapter 14 because you're never going to find this book. It's called the Book of Haggai, and it's in the Old Testament, and it's like a couple pages long, and it takes like half a day to find, except for I have a little marker in it, so I cheated. And the book of Haggai was written long before Jesus came, okay? Hundreds of years before Jesus came. Now, no, I'll read it for you. Don't flip there. Seriously, it'll take you like half the night. So here's kind of the scene in the story. You can find it in your cabin later, and you can read it and stuff like that. You found it? That's cool. You know what? Great job. Okay, listen to me, okay? Listen, book of Haggai, here's what's going on with this. Shh, don't take it as a challenge. Just listen to me for a minute. You can find it later, okay? The book of Haggai, what's taking place with this book, and I'm going to kind of jump back to Peter later in just a little bit, is God's people, the Israelites, they've been kind of living and everything, and the way that they actually, you know what, guys, put your Bibles down. See, I lost you. I have like half of you trying. You're never going to find it. Find it later, okay? I told you, you guys are you're disobedient children. Ugh, Andy, it's just like, it's hopeless. If you want to find it, I give you 30 seconds. Find Haggai right now. I'm going to give it to you. Unreal. Are y'all there yet? I'm so out of control right now. Okay, stop. Listen. Okay, shh. Let me give you the context. Book of Haggai. Listen. What happens is God's people for hundreds of years, they'd always come to worship God, make him their focal point, if you would, at the temple. Okay? The temple was basically like this chapel, but with a whole lot more gold and like 100 times bigger. Okay? The temple was the place where people could come and worship. They would bring sacrifices, and this was their place that they came to worship God. This is before Jesus came, the ultimate sacrifice. You know, this could be a little confusing. So it was different. This was before Jesus. So the temple was a really big deal. It's where the priests would come and they would offer up sacrifices on behalf of the people. It's the place that they would come and meet with God. Now what happened is that temple built by Solomon was built in like the 900-something BC, right? And for hundreds of years, that's what would happen. Well, in 586 BC, like 400-something years later, the Babylonians came and just destroyed that temple, that big gold, like beautiful temple where people would come and worship, where God would be the focal point. They just came and demolished the temple. And the people were just crying like, oh my gosh, like how are we going to worship God and everything? But year after year went by and they didn't really rebuild the temple. Instead, they kind of started rebuilding their houses and they kind of started doing life. And what God would do is he'd come through the prophets and he'd give the people a message. So in the midst of the temple being crushed, about 60 years after the temple was destroyed, the book of Haggai was written. Did you guys follow me on that whole history lesson there? There'll be a quiz later. Okay, just kidding. And here's what happens. Here's what God came to say to these people. Okay, I want for you to listen to this. Then the word of the Lord God, he came to the prophet Haggai. This is to the people. God spoke through Haggai to the people. That's what he did through prophets in the Old Testament. He says, listen, people, is it a time for you yourselves to be living in your paneled houses while this house remains in a ruin? Here's what he did. He came and said, wait a minute. My temple's destroyed over here. But you rebuilt your houses? Like, why didn't you rebuild the temple? Like, that's my house, God's saying. Like, why didn't you rebuild my house? Like, you rebuilt your house. Well, then you find out why. So God continues, well, this is what the Lord Almighty says. Give careful thought to your ways. You have planted much, but have harvested little. You eat, but you never have enough. You drink, but never have your fill. You put on your clothes, but you are not warm. You earn wages only to put them in a purse with holes in it. This is what the Lord Almighty says. Give careful thought to your ways. God comes and goes, and I don't know if you guys are following this here, but what happens is God comes and he goes, guys, we got a problem. And the problem is this. You're focused on all the wrong things. My temple has been in ruins for 60 years. And yet you're building your houses and you're caring about your lives. And in a sense, what he does is he comes and he gives them a focal point check. And he goes, guys, 60 years ago, life changed. But you didn't refocus on me. And he goes, you know where you've been focusing? What'd he do? He called him out on it, didn't he? He said, well, here's what you've done. You're planting all this food, and you're eating all this food and drinking all these things. And then I love it. He goes, you put clothes on but are not warm. In other words, you're going after the world and everything the world has to offer, and it's still not satisfying you. And then he says, you earn wages only to put them in a purse with holes in it. In other words, every dollar you earn, you just want to go out and spend your money. So they were all focused on their stuff. I need to have my big house, and my big Xbox, and my big plasma screen. And I need to have all these different things I need to build. They didn't really have those back then, but I need to build up all these things. And in fact, every dollar that came in, a dollar went out. Every meal I had, I just need another meal. They were focused on that, and they were so focused on their own pleasure and their own life. And God's house was in a ruin. And people go, what's going on with God's house? Like, I don't know. I'm focused on my house. And God came and gave him a message and goes, this just isn't right. Your focal point has changed. It's the same thing that happened to Peter. It's just a different story. For Peter, his focal point changed. He's like, Jesus, I got this. Whoa. And he starts sinking, right? Fast forward to today, thousands of years later. It's the same story in Haggai as it is today, really. We come to camp, or we go to church, we go to youth group, all these different things, and then we leave here, and it's like the distractions come. Man, I spoke at a lot of camps. And as a youth pastor, I've been out there and I've counseled and I've been a part. And I've seen young people go, no, man, I want to leave camp. And this year, Adam, like, man, I'm just going to leave. I'm going to worship Jesus. I'm going to love him. I'm going to serve him. I'm going to volunteer. And I'm going to be like the youth group mascot, you know? Like, I am going to be like Johnny Youth Group Christian guy. Like, that's going to be me. I'm like, no way, that's awesome. And they leave, and then like a week later, I'm like, dude, where'd Johnny Christian guy go anyways? Not going to church. He's reading his Bible. Like, what is going on? He gets back down the hill, and his focal point changed. I have seen high school guys, like, just big, they look like grown men, big high school guys, like, just sit there and weep in my arms. Like, I have left chapel sometimes, and my shirt is just soaked with their snot and tears, and I'm like, guys, like, you ruined the shirt. But anyways, they leave, and I go, man, they go, I want to change my life, man, it's a mess, I want to change my life, I want to follow Jesus. Okay, let's do this, man, we got it. And then they leave, and they go back, and then a week later, I'm like, dude, you did what? And they check out. You guys think it's rough in junior high? Like, I don't mean to be the bearer of bad news, but distractions don't get any easier in high school, and then they don't get any easier in college. I think growing up, you think, well, it's just going to get a little bit easier. I'll get a little bit older. I'll get a little bit more mature. And man, it just gets harder and harder. Ask your counselors. Ask your counselors tonight. And I guarantee you, and I don't mean to just be like this doomsday guy that goes, high school, it's going to be rough. Guess what it is? The statistic says that, in fact, high schoolers, those that are like involved in youth group in high school, and they're involved and they believe, you know, believe in God, and they've confessed Jesus Lord and said they want to follow him, that like somewhere around the neighborhood of 70% of them actually leave the church and leave their faith when they graduate high school. Why? Because they get out there even into the college world and they thought high school was bad, and there's just distractions everywhere. I was a high school youth pastor for year after year after year, and I'd see all these great young people, and we're ready. I'm like, dude, this one's going to make it, and they go away, and everything is just like, and they just, no, come back. It's real, guys, it's real. And you go, well, not me, though, Adam, not me. Like, I got this. Like, I'm solid. No. Even you. Like, any one of us, at any moment, if we don't stay laser-focused, have the ability to do just what Peter did. Guys, Peter was like the super disciple guy, and he got distracted. Like, Peter was like Mr. Bold. Like, he started the church, like the church. Not like your church, like the church. Like, that was Peter. He preached the first sermon like he was the first pastor, and he got distracted. If it can happen to him, think it could happen to us. And then here's what I love about that passage in Haggai. Here's what God does at the end of this passage. It's super cool. Is he goes, well, here's the problem. You've been focusing on all the wrong stuff. You haven't been focused on me. And then he says this. Give careful thought to your ways. Verse 8 of Haggai 1. Go up into the mountains. Bring down timber. And build the house so that I may take pleasure in it and be honored, says the Lord. I love this. It's an action call. He goes, guys, my house has been in ruins. Your focus has been gone. You know what you need to do? Go cut down the stinking trees and build the temple. He just calls them to action. Some of you, when you leave here, like, you're going to need to take that action again and again and again, and every day go, wait, what am I going to focus on today? It's almost like you do this finger thing out the door. Okay, here I go. Today at school, what am I going to focus on? Okay, this weekend when I'm hanging out with my friends, what am I going to focus on? In the Bible, it constantly uses the word daily. Like, daily, it says we need to pick up our cross and follow Jesus. I wish that it was just a one-time step off the edge of the boat, and then you just put it on cruise control. But I'm here to tell you, the walk that many of you started last night, and many of you have before, it's a daily, take a step of faith type of thing. If you don't believe me, ask your counselor, especially those that have maybe been walking this thing for a while. It's not a once-in-a-lifetime deal, guys. It's not you raise your hand at camp. It's not you show up to church once in a while. It's daily, every day of your life. Say, no, I am going to follow Jesus. You know, I think when I start thinking about people in your life, like, do you ever have those people in your life that you're like, no way, these guys just get it and they don't ever seem to be distracted, right? Maybe for you, it's like your counselor, your youth leader, youth pastor person, and you think like, man, I wish I could have faith like them. But really, in reality, all of us, we mess up. It's just daily we're trying to do this thing, right? And so we look at those different people, and there's been a number of different people in my life that I've really looked to, and I've seen them, and I've been like, these people just really get it. And so, sometimes it's people when I've traveled to remote parts of this world and third world countries when they don't have any distractions, like they just seem to have just a passion of faith for Jesus. Like my friend, her name is Pastora Ingracia, and she lives in the jungles of Costa Rica. And I've been down there about 12 times. And she lives out in the jungle with no power and no running water. And she lives in this like bungalow thing. We've kind of built up her house over the years. And she's like the pastor of the local community because like nobody else would. Like, who wants to start a church? Everybody's like, nobody. She's like, fine, I will. So like years ago, she just went down there and then we built her little things about half the size of this building here. And like 15, 20 people come each weekend. And most of them are kids. And there's a few parents and they hang out and they do this. And she just lives up there in the middle of nowhere in the jungles of Costa Rica with like cockroaches this big and like bats the size of this room. It feels like it. Like crazy, right? We're in the middle of the jungle. And she's up there, and she's probably in her late 60s, but she looks like she's about 160, right? And you know what she does? They walk everywhere barefoot through the jungle. She went out to help teach at this other church that was a four-hour walk up the muddy jungle from her place, and she would go there to teach on Sunday nights. And I'm like, dude, I could barely walk to your house, woman. Like, it was nuts, right? She just had this passion for Jesus and to see people in her community come to know Jesus. And I sat there one day, and I went, what's the key? And I just went, like, I'm not saying it's any easier if you're in Gracia because it's really hard, but I looked and I went, there's not much to distract her up here. Like, to get her water, she grabs her jug and she walks down about 100 yards down the hill to where maybe 200 to 300 yards maybe, where the spring pops out and she gets her water, she cooks. Like, there's just, I mean, we have so much that distracts us, don't we? So much. Like, more than any generation before us. And it's not that we need to go, oh, poor us, we have all these distractions. We just have to know it. You have to know that the generation that you're a part of is the most distracted generation. I mean, we could be sitting there, and we're going like this, and we're just flipping through our Facebook and doing our thing, and the world's going on around us. And at that moment, we're focusing on Facebook. And the next moment, I'm focusing on this guy. And I mean, we just focus on a million things. I remember a few years ago, I dropped a few high school boys off after youth group, and I dropped them off at one guy's house, and they all got in the back of my car, and I was like trying to talk to them, but of course they were sitting there doing this with their phone or whatever, and just like doing their thing. So like I was like, this has been a non-eventful drive home with these three guys. Yeah, they're probably 15, 16 years old. So I pull up and I drop them off at the house, and they're like, hey, thanks, Adam, thanks for the ride. And it's late at night, and I turn around, and like as I'm driving out, I drop them off, right? So you think they would socialize or hang out. I drop them off, and the three of them are like in a circle going like this, and I see the glow on their faces. At that moment, like, that was their focus. I don't know, the girl they were texting, whatever was going on. Same thing that happened for Peter. And in Hebrews, there's a passage in chapter 12 that says this. Hebrews chapter 12, starting in verse 1, you can look it up later, but it talks about it and says, let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. My challenge to you tonight is very simple. It sounds pretty churchy. I know. I mean, it just sounds very simple. Just daily fix your eyes on Jesus. I wish I could come up with something more profound, but man, if I could do that every day, if I could really do that every day without distractions, man, my life would be so much better. I want to tell you about it. About probably the person in my life, maybe the, you know, there's people like Ingracia that maybe modeled this to me, but just some real-life people. I want to just key in on one particular kid. And this kid, he grew up in my youth group. And this kid just challenged me like crazy. You go, wait, aren't you supposed to be the youth pastor? Yeah, I was his youth pastor. But this kid just, man, radically challenged me because, like, he seemed, and he had some life circumstances that I'll tell you about, but he really seemed to stay focused on Jesus. And I thought, man, I want to be like that guy. And this kid, his name was Clayton. And Clayton, he was a part of my youth group. I was a junior high youth pastor, actually, when he came into seventh grade. And this kid, actually, he'd had leukemia. And which is like his blood cells, like were bad blood cells, right? Like cancerous blood cells.
And so, like, when he was little, he had to get, like, chemotherapy and radiation and all this different stuff. And he's a little guy, just a little guy. And so he'd been through a lot coming into junior high. But, you know, he gets into my junior high group, and his cancer, you know, he'd gone away. And so he's kind of just this normal kid coming into junior high. Just like everybody else, he came to Hume Lake, actually, in junior high. And he was a follower of Christ. And yet when he was in junior high, he got diagnosed with this thing again. And so, you know, we're out in California, so we go to, like, Stanford University. It's where, like, the best kind of, you know, university is out there for situations like this, and the best hospital. So we went to the children's hospital there. And so junior high, like, it came back again, and he had to get, in addition to chemotherapy, he had to get, like, a bone marrow transplant. And he got that from his brother, and that doesn't feel good at all, right? But he got this, and we didn't know if he was going to make it. And, man, he comes back, and he, like, makes it, right? And the doctor goes, man, the cancer's gone. So he gets into high school, freshman year, sophomore year. And, you know, he's a little guy. Like, by the time, you know, he's 16, he still never hit 100 pounds. You know, he's just a little guy for being in high school because, like, he'd had all these things happen to his body. And he was just this good Christian kid, you know, like, made good choices, had good friends, you know, but just, you know, kind of your normal Christian kid, like, junior year of high school, right? When he was about maybe 16 to 17 years old, it comes back for the third time. And so he's like, oh my gosh. So he goes back to cancer and or back to the Stanford, and they tell him, man, you have cancer again. So he gets another bone marrow transplant from his sister. And we're visiting him up in the hospital. He's like 11th grade, and like we didn't know if he was going to make it or not, right? And he made it. And like they said, yeah, we don't know if he's going to like literally make it out of the hospital. I remember visiting him, walking away, going, that might be the last time I see this guy. And so that was the third time he had it, and bam, it goes away. And we're like, no way, it's awesome. So, like, he goes on. He was on the, like I said, you know, he graduated high school, still never hit 100 pounds, and just a little guy. And he graduates high school, and he comes on to work for me at church, and he's a junior high intern. He's part of our church, and he came up. I remember this summer, right after he graduated, he's 18 years old, and he went to Hume Lake in California, and he counseled. And I'll never forget, out at Hume Lake, out there they have this, like, rope swing. It's called Noah's Nightmare. And you swing off the rope swing, and they would do a belly flop contest off of that. So you'd go off the rope swing and, like, then land and do a belly flop contest. It was stupid, right? And so then he, I remember he was a counselor, and I remember he did it and got perfect 10s that year. He was 18 years old, and he went, and he's just this little guy, but it was like this little, like, crack, and it just echoed through the canyon, right? And he was just this awesome counselor. So he started interning and working at the church. And so it was the beginning of his, you know, first year of college, and he decided, I want to stick around and just, I want to give to the church. And so he did. And so, like, it's the beginning of his first year of college. He's 18 years old, and his cancer came back again for the fourth time. I'm like, oh my gosh. So he goes up to Stanford. He goes to the doctor, and the doctor goes, Clayton, man, like, it's back, but we can't do anything about it. What do you mean you can't do anything? Like, bone marrow and radiation, chemo. So we've tried it all, and, like, your body, it's not going to take anything. Clayton goes, no. How much time do I have left to live? Doctor goes, 3 to 4 months. It's 18 years old. I put myself in his shoes, and I go, man, what happened if I was 18 years old? And I went to the doctor, and the doctor goes, dude, you got 3 months to live. So Clayton goes, all right. He comes home, and I met up with him right when he got home. And I'm thinking at that time, like, what do you do when you're an 18-year-old kid and you think, ah, I got a big life to live. I got all these years and live to be 80 or something. Like, what are you going to do? And sit down and I start talking with him. He goes, Adam, I've been thinking. I only got 3 or 4 months to live. I want to make the most of it. I go, really? And he goes, yeah. Like, I got a lot of friends who don't know Jesus. I want to do something about this. He's 18 years old. I go, Clay, how about next week you come down, you speak at high school group. Tell everybody, invite their friends, and that'll be the start. Next Wednesday. Okay. So he comes down the next Wednesday. Instead of me speaking, I go, hey, I'm Clayton. He's 18. He's going to speak at a high school group. 700 high schoolers showed up that night. Yeah, we had to move out of our, like, yeah, we didn't even have a room big enough. I was like, where are we going to fit everybody? We jammed them in this huge room that we have, and, like, the teachers were there, the local principal, the high school was there. Everybody shows up. At the end of this thing, he's just preaching it. He talks about Jesus. He does what I did last night. He goes, hey, anybody want to come to follow Jesus? 75 of his high school friends that night said, yes, I want to follow Jesus. I remember it was like yesterday. It was November 5th, 2008. That's how long ago this was. And after that, like, he started going and, like, man, he made some videos for Hume Lake, actually, at the time, and started speaking, and anybody that would talk to him, but he started getting sicker and sicker, and basically the last few months of his life, he just said, I want to be focused. Nothing else matters anymore. Like, nothing else really matters. I mean, if the Bible is true, when we die, like, we can either go see Jesus or we can be apart from him. Like, if that's true, then what else matters for me? I want to show you just a little clip. There's a little glitch in the clip, but I had it on my flash drive. I get back to Will at the soundboard. And this was a little minute or two clip of the night that he spoke at our youth group. That night that I said the 700 high schoolers showed up, this was him speaking. And I want for you to see his focus and the way he just says, guys, this is how he challenges everybody. You need to get rid of the distractions. So let's watch just a little clip of Clayton.
Tonight, knowing that life is short, knowing full well that life is short and it is a vapor that is here 1 second, then gone the next. I'm going to be honest with you guys. Everyone dies. I mean, I know it better than most because the doctors have told me that I'm going to die. Doctors can tell you guys you're going to die and it's still going to be true. They just don't have a window of when that might happen. And I am forced to live my life every day at a time. I think, this is what I believe, that you guys have it easier than I do. No, scratch that, reverse it. I have it easier than you do because you don't know, you don't have a window of when you're going to die. I do, I have that luxury so I can drop everything and live every day as if I'm going to die. You guys have distractions. You guys can get distracted. You guys have school, work, play, whatever, anything and everything that Satan has you distracted by. And that's why he loves the United States of America. All the distractions that this country has.
You can, That's just real. That's not coming to you from a camp speaker, a pastor. That was just a kid who went, doctor told me I'm going to die. So what did he say at the end? Did you catch that? He said, I have it easier than you. And you're going, well, Clayton, what are you talking about? The doctor told you you're going to die. How is life easier for you? And he goes, because I'm not distracted by all the stuff you are. None of it matters to me anymore. Like, who cares how much money I save up? I can't go spend it anymore. Like, the money doesn't matter. He's like, I'm going to go date a girl. I'm not going to get married anymore. Like, all those things. He's like, it's just none of those things matter to me anymore. There's only one thing that mattered to him. It was not only his relationship with Christ, but the other people around him. And, you know, he went on and he actually lived for 5 more months. And on March 16th, 2009, he went to be with Jesus. It was about 4 months, maybe. And I was there the last night that he was alive, and he was just, like, literally still, like, preaching at us. I was like, go Clayton. He's like, my life's over, guys. It's all about loving God and loving people. Actually, if you ever want to, you can go to claytonstory.com, and you can see videos and, like, but I don't want tonight to be about Clayton. Like, he was a good friend of mine and a great young man that challenged me in a way that nobody else could challenge me, because I could listen to the best of speakers and everything, but when I'm listening to a young person that has a window on the end of their life, like, he was focused. I want to ask you guys tonight as we close, like, what would you do and how would you live your life differently if you knew that you only had a few months to live? Because like Clayton said, doctor can tell any of us we're going to die. I mean, I don't mean to be the bearer of bad news, but 100 years from now, probably most of us aren't going to be here anymore. But let's say you had a few months. Like, how would you live your life differently? Would your focus change? And that's something to think about. Some pretty deep stuff to talk about in cabin time. And I want you to, and we could get all emotional over it and think about, oh, okay, we're not going to die. You know what? James 4:14 says, Clayton said it, that our life is but a vapor. It's here one moment and it's gone the next. And for Peter at that moment when he stepped off that boat, like, it was just every second at a time going, I have to fix my eyes on Jesus at this moment. For that moment, for Clayton, nothing else mattered. For that story in Haggai, to wrap that up, like they end up going down and building the temple. They obeyed God. He said, guys, you got your eyes focused on all the wrong things. Just go build my temple. Build my house. I want to challenge you guys, Hume New England, middle school, man, this first week, live every day like it's your last. Remember that focal point thing, and every day just get up and go, wait a minute. What are the things that really matter in my life? When you go home, I mean, that may be you're loving your parents in a different way. You're respecting them in a new way. It may mean that your passion to read the Bible changes. It may mean that inviting people to church now becomes more important. Do you understand this? Like, all of these things begin to change when you keep your focal point where it needs to be. God, I just pray for tonight as we close up, God, that you would help for each of us to keep our eyes fixed on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. God, as we close in this song, even it says that we need you. God, we so many times think we need so many things. We need this friendship, or we need this phone, or we need this toy, or we need this, I don't know, this piece of clothing, or we need all of these things and acceptance. God, tonight we just want to close by saying, actually, God, we just really need you. God, more than anything, God, we just need you. From that story of Peter stepping out in that moment and having that faith, God, at that moment his own strength couldn't save him. It was you reaching out your hand and saying, Peter, I got this. God, we confess to you the times where we think we need so many things. God, all we need is you. Love you, Jesus.